there is a Russian cosmonaut in the orbit who will work during 1 year and a half. We have a great experience in a very prolonged stay under space circumstances, space conditions, and I believe it will be very serious support for prolonged excursion for Mars, maybe.
The future of Russian space science on this edition of Common Ground. Common Ground is a program on world affairs and the people who shape events. It's produced by the Stanley Foundation. I'm Keith Porter. The history of Soviet astronomy and space science is truly spectacular. The Soviet Union had some of the largest observatories in the world, well-funded laboratories, and a string of space exploration successes, including the first satellite launch and the first manned orbit of Earth. But the breakup of the country has caused many prominent and not-so-prominent space scientists to leave Russia, and those who remain sometimes don't even have the electricity to turn on their equipment. We'll discuss this turn of events with Professor Alexander Gerstein. At the Russian Academy of Sciences, he's the head of the History of Astronomy and Space section at the Institute for the History of Science and Technology.
The scientists had many privileges. They had a good support from the side of government. This time, the situation is very hard in economics, and government, our new Russian government, practically has no possibility to support science as well as at previous time. And the situation in science really is very hard. So many young people left the science, and in my mind there is the only one way to survive, to have a cooperative joint program with the scientists from the Western world.
It's been said that because of this upheaval and the loss of funding that you are losing an entire generation of scientists who aren't being trained, who previously would have been trained, but now they're being lost. Is that true?
I believe that's true. I hope, I am an optimist, and I hope that we shall overcome these difficulties, but this time is very bad for all fields of activity which were connected with government, for education, for physicians, for scientists too.
You also mentioned the number of people who are leaving, the so-called brain drain.
Yeah.
How serious is that?
It's a very serious problem for Russia, because the most prominent persons are working abroad this time. For example, I can account a dozen of prominent cosmologists, Russian cosmologists. All of them are working abroad. Another problem that many young people are leaving sciences because it's impossible to support their families with their regular salary. Today, I have read, that's true, that the salary of our president Yeltsin is $290 per month.
Yeltsin's salary. $290 a month.
A month, yeah. And it was written in your newspaper. That's a matter of fact. And my high salary is approximately $100 per month. But because this time we have an open economics, the level of prices, not accurate, but approximately the international level. And of course, it's very hard to survive under these conditions.
Also, besides the people leaving And the problem of paying the scientists, there's also the problem of maintaining and operating the equipment as well. Is that right?
Of course. That's right. That's right. It's another problem. Because, unfortunately, we have several regions with wars, with some kind of wars or civil wars, in the wars between Armenia and Azerbaijan, the civil war in Georgia, and we had wonderful observatories, astronomical observatories there. For example, Burakan Observatory in Armenia, very famous under leadership of academician Ambar Tsumyan. And of course, this astronomical observatory is out of operation this time due to war.
The observatory in where?
In Burakan.
Burakan.
In Armenia.
In Armenia.
And another observatory is Abastumani Observatory in Georgia. It's very hard time for many, many Russian observatories. But even if there were no wars in these regions, they very often have no money to supply their scientific activity. We have an observatory on the Northern Caucasus with the 6-meter reflector. That's
largest?
Several years ago, it was the largest. Mm-hmm. This time, it is not the largest, but several years ago, it was the largest telescope in the world. And this time, a director of the observatory has no money to pay for electricity. That's a great problem. And really, there is the only one way. He invites the foreigners to observe with this telescope, and only due to joint program he has money for surveying of the observatory.
Before we talk too much about more about the current situation, I want to know how the Soviet totalitarian state affected the study of science and your specialties, astronomy and space science. How did the Soviet system not only support the study but distort the study as well?
You see that is a very specific point, because of course our science was oppressed. Of course it was oppressed as many other field of activities, but it was no special idea to oppress the science. It was a special idea to support a science. And so, in spite of very poor, very weak economics, we had a great science. That is a matter of fact. That is, in many fields of scientific activities, for example, in theoretical physics, in chemistry, in astronomy, Soviet scientists were okay. That is a matter of fact.
They were what? They were a key?
They were okay. They were on a very good positions in among the international community, international scientific community. And this time, the situation is much more difficult.
Would you say it's... It's a difficult choice, I'm sure, to wonder whether you would live under the Soviet system with consistent funding or have political freedom and not know where your funding's coming from.
You see that if we consider only the science, of course, political freedom and scientific freedom is a very important thing, but it is necessary to have materials, data, computers, equipments, devices, and that's the problem of money. So if you have a political freedom without money, it will be not a good science. That is
would
fact.
Would you go back?
No, I believe no. I believe that practically no one in our country don't want to go back.
Personally, what was the level of interaction you were allowed to have with your colleagues outside? Were you allowed to travel? Did you have free communications with your scientific colleagues outside the Soviet Union?
It was really very hard, because only a small part of Soviet scientists, a privileged part, had the possibility to travel. It was possible to publish your results abroad, but it was a very long and very hard process. This time, the situation absolutely other. Due to Carnegie Foundation from the United States, Carnegie Foundation of the United States, our Institute for History of Science and Technology in Moscow received electronic mail, and that is a great thing. This time I have approximately 100 correspondents in the United States, and due to electronic mail, I had possibility during last 2 years published my presentation several times abroad. Really, it is a great thing for the progress of science. Another example, I was invited with presentation for the annual meeting of the American Astronomical Society at Washington. After that, I visited at first Atlanta, secondly Tallahassee in Florida, Florida State University. After that, I arrived to North Carolina, Durham, Duke University. After that, I visited Grinnell here in Iowa State. After that, I went to San Francisco and I had a lecture in Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory. I visited Ames Space Center. This time, I arrived to Iowa City, and after that, I shall go to Harvard University, to Boston, and after that to New York and back to Washington. Of course, this complicated route was impossible to arrange without electronic mail and modern devices. Yeah, it's a great help in not only in my work. Everyone in Russian science this time is feeling this international support, and that's very, very important.
When you were first, when the breakup of the Soviet Union first began, and you were given your first broader glimpse outside, were there scientific developments in your field that you were surprised to learn about, equipment or ideas or publications that you knew nothing of and were able to find out about after the breakup?
There is another paradoxical thing, that when our contacts were limited, we had a lot of foreign literature. And really, I knew about the situation in American and European science very well. This time, after we have received the political freedom, but without only small financial support, very often we have no scientific literature because we have no hard currency to buy it. That is a great problem.
So before you had
before I had more information than this time, and it is very important for me to be here. And my first point, to see new magazines, new scientific issues, to communicate with people, because I would like to be on the level of current science.
We're talking in this edition of Common Ground with Alexander Gerstein, a prominent space scientist from the Russian Academy of Sciences. Printed transcripts and audio cassettes of this program are available. Listen at the end of the broadcast for details. Common Ground is a service of the Stanley Foundation, a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that conducts a wide range of programs meant to provoke thought and encourage dialogue on world affairs.
Here, much of the research and advances in the hard sciences was driven by the Cold War and by defense research. And I'm sure you found that to be the case as well in the Soviet Union.
Absolutely.
What role did the Cold War play in scientific developments over the last 40 years?
I believe that is a subject of investigation. There is not a bad idea in collaboration two large bodies, the Smithsonian Institution, the National Air and Space Museum, and American Museum, National Museum of American History, and Soviet Academy of Science, we would like to prepare a joint exhibit on the science and technology during the Cold War. We are planning to have three main sections. Nuclear race, space race, and cultural and political background of these events. And you see, in my mind, Cold War had several babies. Of course, nuclear race was an ugly baby. Ugly baby, yeah. And the space race was not very ugly baby. Space race moderated the jump of mankind to the moon. In my mind, that is the subject of wonderful investigation. The comparative history of this great event, in my mind, it was the greatest event from the time of Columbus traveling. It's the jump of mankind to another planetary body, the jump to the moon. And it was, of course, the baby of Cold War.
In this country, scientists who were working on anything that would benefit the defense research, toward the end, anything that would benefit Star Wars, received a lot of funding. Was that also the case in the Soviet Union, that researchers who were working on things that would benefit defense were favored?
The problem is more broad, I believe. As a historian, I have to state that in every case, in every epoch, the war was a moderator for a science.
Was a moderator for science.
As a moderator of the science. And if we would like, and we do, to live without wars, it is necessary to find new moderators, new approaches, new ideas for joint venture in field of science to progress, to advance it. It will be very, very important. In every case, it is necessary to have a competition. I believe there is no prosperity without competitions. In Lawrence Livermore, I have heard, by chance, I have heard a good joke. A good joke. That Russia, of course, is very important for competition, but it is not the main enemy. The main enemy, of course, Los Alamos.
See, of course, that is... The other national laboratory, yeah.
There is a very important and interesting point in history of science. You see that there was no one time a great, brilliant star alone. Every time we had a Pleiades, a constellation of great stars in science. Because No one can work alone. It is necessary to have a competitor, a moderator, another side to discuss, to go ahead. That is very stimulating point, you see? And under new conditions, without the Cold War, it is necessary to find new approaches. In my mind, the future space investigation will be analogies to Antarctica investigation.
Analogous to the Antarctic investigation.
Mm-hmm. And this parallel is very correct because Antarctica gives the possibility of very different levels of cooperation. And Antarctica gives the opportunity for small nations, for small groups, not only for gigantic efforts. You see, in my mind, the future cooperation in space science will be analogous to Antarctica investigations.
That even smaller countries will be able to be a part of the space cooperation.
Absolutely.
I want to talk about cooperation in just a second. I have one other question first about economic times. In bad economic times, like those now in Russia, astronomy, space science, seem to be the place where people want to cut first. Even here, President Clinton's new budget proposal has a cut in the NASA budget, the first time that there would potentially be a cut for that agency. How do you argue against cutting those science budgets?
Oh, very often, the science is the first item for cutting of budget. But those who would like to cut, I believe, forgot that if this idea was in ancient time, we were continuing to live in caves. We were Neanderthals. The science, of course, not the only one, but among the most important aspects of progress. And the Soviet Union would not become the superpower without science. And I believe United States would not be a superpower without science. And previous generations of presidents, the United States, understood these points. They invited the best scientists throughout the world from other countries. They supported the important directions. I believe it is impossible to forget all these historian lessons.
Let's talk about current history being made in U.S.-Russian space cooperation. We have a cosmonaut who has traveled on the space shuttle.
At first time.
Yes.
It's the first time when Russian cosmonauts is walking inside for a long time inside shuttle. Of course, we had good experience. We had Apollo-Soyuz common flight.
The Apollo-Soyuz flight.
Mm-hmm. Flight, yeah, in 75. We had a... I would like to remember the space collaboration. We had an exchange of lunar soils, and we had exchange of many data about the planetary circumstances, planetary environment. It was very important both for the USSR and for the United States. But I would like to hope that this flight of Krikalev inside the shuttle will be the symbol, will be the sign of new era in our giant, in our collaboration in space science.
Now, an American astronaut, Norman Thagard, will travel to Russia.
Absolutely.
He'll be launched on a Soyuz spacecraft to the Mir
station.
Space station.
You see that really our engineers and scientists have a very good experience in many aspects. Do you remember how long time American astronauts worked in space during one excursion, during one orbiting, during one flight, one mission? I believe that's weeks, only 1, 2, 3 weeks.
Yes.
Yeah. But this time there is a Russian cosmonaut in the orbit who will work during 1.5 years. We have a great experience in a very prolonged stay under space circumstances, space conditions, and I believe it will be very serious support for prolonged excursion for Mars, maybe. There are many different ideas. We have a good designs, a good devices for example, for rovers for Mars.
The rovers that would explore the surface of Mars.
The surface of Mars and Moon. Why not? Why is it impossible to use Russian rover and American scientific instrumentation for the next step of investigation of Mars? Why not? That will be the best approach for both sides.
Do you think we need a challenge like that, like President Kennedy's challenge on the race to the moon? Do we need a challenge?
Yeah. Yeah. And I believe that the shuttle program was very important, of course, but it was not so intrigue as Apollo program, because shuttle is only a tool for something, but not the purpose, not the target for progress of science.
The space shuttle is merely a tool. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like a truck.
Yeah, of course. Apollo program had a target, scientific target, and as well tool for the to fulfill, to reach this target, to reach this purpose. Shuttle program is only a track, only a tool. And of course, it will be wonderful to have this new challenge, and not only for the one superpower, but the whole world.
That is Professor Alexander Gerstein. He's head of the History of Astronomy and Space section at the Institute for the History of Science and Technology in the Russian Academy of Sciences. I'm Keith Porter. For a printed transcript or an audio cassette of this program, please send $5 per transcript or $11.70 per cassette to Common Ground, show number 9422, Journal Graphics, 1535 Grant Street, Denver, Colorado, 80203. Again, ask for program number 9422. To order by credit card, you can call toll-free 1-800-825-5746. If you'd like more information about the Stanley Foundation or you have some comment about the program, you can write to us at 216 Sycamore Street, Muscatine, Iowa, 52761. However, to order cassettes or transcripts, please use our toll-free number, 1-800-825-5746. Our theme music was created by B.J. Lederman. Common Ground was produced and funded by the Stanley Foundation.